Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Ecologists worldwide increasingly recognize the relationship between keystone species and habitat destruction. Fortunately for members of the animal and plant communities, these ecologists possess the necessary skills to recognize these changes when they occur. The term ecology comes from the Greek word oikos, which means house or dwelling. Unlike those zoologists or botanists who often study individual species, ecologists study environments and the relationships and interactions of all those who dwell in them. Although you can find multiple definitions of a keystone species, one of the most inclusive comes from Biodiversity A to Z, a United Nations affiliate. Briefly, a keystone species is one whose influence on ecosystem function and diversity is disproportionate to their numbers. The loss of these species triggers a cascade of direct or indirect changes that undermines the survival of all the living organisms that share that same space. There may not be as many members of a keystone species in an ecosystem as those belonging to other species. But as the keystone species goes, so goes the ecosystem. The loss of keystone species and their ecosystems go hand in hand with habitat destruction. Much of this is human-induced. Loss of members of keystone species due to overhunting for profit, pleasure, or because these animals are considered pests for some reason, takes its toll. But so does habitat destruction caused by environmental pollution, overdevelopment, and changes in weather associated with human-induced accelerated climate change. Scientific interest in the idea that some species may be more important than others to the survival of the natural household began with a simple experiment back in the 1960s. At the time, starfish were disappearing from the Pacific coast tide pools at an alarming rate, and the primary cause was wasting disease. The disease wasn't unknown in these species, but previously the starfish population would recover following an outbreak. However, that no longer was happening because starfish also were being killed by fishermen who considered them competitors. To determine the effect the complete absence of starfish would have on the tide pool ecosystem, all the starfish were removed from some pools and kept out by a barrier. An equal number of tide pools were left unchanged to serve as controls. Because starfish are voracious predators, conventional wisdom at the time said that the other species in the tide pool would flourish. However, that's not what happened. Instead, the mussels initially took over, but lacking the stable population effects of starfish, the ecosystem ultimately collapsed. As a few enlightened scientists continued studying the devastating effects the loss of one species could have on an entire ecosystem, the name keystone species emerged. Another example is the role of the marine otter in maintaining the kelp forest ecosystem. Remove the otters, and the whole system collapses. Contrary to what some fishermen believed, The otters weren't eating only the fish living in those areas. They also were eating a lot of sea urchins that otherwise would disrupt the kelp forest that sheltered and supported all those fish, as well as a lot of other animal and plant life and life-sustaining microorganisms. Or consider a much more familiar example that occurred when the Northern Rockies gray wolf, Lupus canis, was hunted to dangerously low levels that threatened the species' survival. Because the creation of Yellowstone Park in 1926 didn't protect wolves from hunters, their numbers dwindled there too. However, when the United States Fish and Wildlife Service announced its plans to reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone in 1995, this prompted a lot of comment. This resulted in a mostly, but not always, verbal battle between ranchers and hunters and ecologists and animal-loving members of the public. The ranchers were adamant that the added wolves would ravage their livestock and destroy their livelihoods. The hunters felt equally positive that the wolves would eliminate all of the wild animals they loved to hunt. Meanwhile, the ecologists saw the wolves as a way to reinstate the park's natural balance. Animal lovers attached a variety of symbolic and philosophical meaning to the wolves' reintroduction that essentially pronounced it a good thing. Once concrete data on the results of the introduction began to accumulate, the initial emotionally charged responses began to wane. Thanks to the magic of the internet and YouTube, many of us worldwide got our first look at what happens to an environment when a waning keystone population is allowed to recover. Even with my background in the biological sciences, I joined the masses stunned by the changes triggered by the wolves' return. War sadly causes some of the worst human-induced natural habitat destruction. When war in Mozambique ravaged an area that included the Gorongosa National Park, 95% of the park's large mammals were destroyed. Nor were there enough predators to limit the increase in plant eaters long enough for the land to recover. As a result, large herds of wildebeest further destroyed the war-ravaged land. Perhaps because the war-weary country had had its fill of predatory humans vying for top status, the idea of tincture of time plus adding predators to help control the wildebeest was a hard sell. Fortunately, ecological sense prevailed, African wild dogs were introduced to the area, the wildebeest population stabilized, and the park came back to life. Later in the Serengeti Rules, biologist Sean B. Carroll wrote about the work of these keystone species pioneers and others whose work revealed the basic concepts that govern the natural world. Later, an award-winning film by the same name also documented the early work. Many scientists and members of the public still shy away from taking a broader, more integrated ecological view in favor of a problem-oriented one. They prefer the safety of mental silos that enable them to ignore all those messy relationships and interactions that make up real-world life. But within all of those messy connections lies the magic, but also a certain amount of pain. It's bad enough to lose a keystone species and remain ignorant of the loss of the ecosystem that goes with that species. But it's a lot worse to lose keystone species and know all that has been lost. A wildlife scientist summed up that feeling perfectly when he said, "It's the moment when we turn to each other and say, 'My God, what have we done?' Because in that instant, we know that whatever else we humans may be, we definitely are not members of a keystone species."
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.